I've been walking a tightrope between fact and fiction. Been wrestling with demons in small bottled prisons. Been talking to sinners who claim to be Christian. Been shouting at leaders who claim to be listening. And the pendulum swings, but I can't stop the pull. Our elections are travesties paid for in full by a gang full of sellouts who worship a bull. Why can't it all just be free and equal?
Hi, I'm Christina Tobin, and welcome to the Free and Equal Network. I have Dr. Jill Stein with us on this interview today. She is, as many of you probably already know, the former presidential candidate of the Green Party, 2012. Jill, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Christina. It's great to be here.
Jill, I just really got to know you a lot more really after we had the Larry King debate last year. And I think you're one of my favorite people in politics. I don't want to say of the entire presidential debate because that would be partisan, but I mean, you and Rocky Anderson, I know the best. And I'm really finding you to be a great person. And thank you so much for taking the time to be on our show today.
Oh, thank you. And the feeling is mutual, of course. I have great admiration for all your rabble-rousing, Christina.
Yeah, putting together a debate, the hardest part was getting all the candidates to confirm together because you're dealing with parties, campaigns, and getting Larry King to moderate. It was the easy part, I always tell people. So, but that being said, how was the experience for you running for president, you know, dealing with the Commission on Presidential Debates, mainstream media, even ballot access? I just want people to know what you went through, and you don't give up. You really don't.
Well, you know, I feel like what I went through as a candidate is what we are going through as residents of, you know, of this democracy, which is under attack, you know, as people who are struggling to get health care or to find jobs or to have decent wages or, you know, to stop the climate meltdown, which is really closing in not only on our children's future, but on our future too, you know. So it's no walk in the park, but, you know, it's not like running for president is really different from just trying to lead a life and find security and get yourself out of debt and keep a roof over your head. You know, I feel like in many ways it was just a privilege to be able to be a part of that big team that you have when you are in a alternative party, which is of, by, and for the people and is not bought and paid for by Wall Street and the big corporations. It's a real honor to be in that role. So, you know, it's not like there were any surprises here. This is what we expected. But just to clarify for people, you know, people know how hard it is to have our voices heard, and it affects all of us when we cannot get independent candidates on the ballot. So, for example, in Pennsylvania, we had to get 20,000 signatures in order to get a ballot line, whereas the Democratic and Republican parties only had to get 2,000. They sort of get grandfathered in, and then because they have these big machines, they meet the rules that they write. So all they need, you know, election after election is 2,000 signatures, whereas we have to go out and get 20,000. But we can't stop there because they will challenge us if there's any way that they can invalidate some of our signatures. They will challenge them in court. So that we cannot get by with 20,000, we have to get 40,000, because when they challenge us, and they've done this before, they not only can throw us off the ballot, but then they can hold us accountable for their legal costs. And they have all these, you know, fancy schmancy lawyers. So we wind up paying, you know, potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars in their legal costs. So they have set up this very punitive an intimidating system, which is intended to keep challengers off the ballot. The corporate press, which we call the O-press, not the press, but the O-press, because they keep us all locked in, you know, they then don't cover candidates who are sort of outside of the box. So, You know, all these things kind of add up to make it very hard for everyday people to actually own our government, even when, in fact, we have the majority on most of the things that we want and need, from jobs to downsizing the military to bringing the troops home to doing, you know, really fixing the climate change threat, getting students out of debt, homeowners out of debt, et cetera. There is national consensus on these things, but you'd never know it to look at what's coming out of both political parties in Washington, D.C.
You know, it's a story I haven't really shared with anyone as Ralph Nader's 2008 National Ballot Access Coordinator, with the help of so many other leaders, was able to get him on the ballot across the U.S. We could only successfully 45 states plus D.C. We couldn't afford all 50 states, millions of dollars. And, you know, we weren't at one point, I was like, I don't think Ralph's going to get on the ballot in Pennsylvania, because what most people don't know is that not only do you have to get 20,000 signatures, which is, you know, a lot more than the D's and R's, but in Pennsylvania, you have to be a registered voter to be able to circulate in that state.
Right.
And when I went in there, we had like a week or two, had little to no signatures. I had to get on the ground. And thank God the National Libertarian Party had just finished up their drive, because by law, you can't have signature gathering for more than one political party at the same time in Pennsylvania. However, when the drive finished for the Libertarian parties, we transferred all petitions over to Ralph Nader, and we were able to successfully get like 30,000, 40,000 signatures in a matter of weeks. But, you know, I kind of had to put, it felt like at my time, at times my life at stake, because I was in the really not good part of Philadelphia, sometimes walking around with $10,000 cash to pay these circulators out of hand, you know, and having to validate, make sure there's no fraud, being an expert on that. And it's like, wow, the system's not only, you know, well, it's just so flawed, and the results of the two-party system controlled by the elite has put so many of our lives, I feel, at stake on
And
so many levels.
exactly. I mean, literally, our lives are really, you know, in the target hairs now. We all are. But just to add one detail here, so you go to all this work to get on the ballot, and then you're not included in debates,
Right.
and they don't cover you in the press, so that you generally don't make the thresholds that you need in order to be on the ballot for the next election. So you have to roll that rock right back up the mountain, you know, like the myth of Sisyphus. We're just in it, you know, in this eternal hell, trying to get out of this tyranny, back up the mountain of democracy, and they have us locked in. But the good news is there is a big fight back going on right now, and this movement for democracy and justice is really sweeping across the planet right now. Whether you're looking at the democracy revolutions, which are still, you know, going strong, they have a big uphill battle, but they are going strong in the Middle East. The Occupy protests, the austerity uprisings, the student protests, you know, this is a really massive movement like, you know, we haven't seen in certainly in our lifetime, probably not in a whole lot of lifetimes. So I think it really is all about our coming together on a common agenda for people, peace, and the planet. And the minute we do that, we are unstoppable.
Yeah, let's shift over. I mean, I definitely love the fact that you guys filed suit. I believe Ben Mansky, your campaign manager, had contacted me at one point in wanting to join efforts with the Libertarian Party. I tried every, from Gary Johnson to his right-hand people, Our American Initiative. It just seemed like there was no interest on their end to work with you guys. But I mean, Ben really tried hard, and that I just wanted to briefly touch the topic of the debates before we shift over to your awesome Green Shadow Cabinet project. But what was your feeling on filing suit there? Where are you at with that now? I
Well,
just want
you know, at this point, we have not filed a suit. We began a petition campaign to sort of gather strength, and it's still, shall we say, you know, still under discussion as to what the strategy will be going forward, because we're all going to have to fight this again, whether we're running or we have other people running. We're going to have to fight it again. But, you know, we definitely did take it to the front lines. We took it to the court of public opinion, at the gates of the one of the debate sites on Long Island, where my running mate and I were arrested for basically just trying to walk into the campus, you know, let alone the debate building. We were arrested. We were handcuffed. We were tied with handcuffs. We were strapped to metal chairs in a detention facility surrounded by about 16 militarized police, and Secret Service agents, 16 of them, for us two little old grandmotherly types, as if we were such a threat, and we were handcuffed to chairs for 8 hours until the debate was over, like we were such a threat, you know, to national security. We had to be kept in this secret dark site, you know, at an undisclosed location so that no terrible threats to our democracy would occur during the course of this debate, where Romney and Obama basically refused to disagree with each other. You know, they refused to touch on, you know, the outrageous war. They competed for, you know, who was a bigger warmonger on Iran, for example, or against China, and, you know, who was a better friend to the oil companies and who had a bigger track record for, you know, more pollution and building more pipelines, and who could be friendlier to coal. You know, it was like an outrageous waste of the American television viewers' time to have been subjected to that debate. And that's why we were locked up, so we wouldn't threaten that incredibly boring experience.
I have to say, I don't see you as a grandmotherly type, but by any means. But I guess the only threat you two really were is just breaking the stranglehold of the two-party system by offering more voices and more choices. And so so thanks for that. And on the debate issue, I recently spoke at Gary Johnson's strategy conference. They brought up the debates. The lawyer was there. She really wants to connect with the Green parties, with you, Ben. So I want to help make that happen afterwards, because that's really the only way Free and Equal in the movement can help publicize something that's truly nonpartisan, both the Libertarian Party and Green parties and so on, unite on such an important issue. But so Green Shadow Cabinet, check that out for listeners, greenshadowcabinet.us. I've had a lot of supporters on the road. You're definitely getting some momentum there, Jill, because I've had supporters ask me, what do you think of Jill Stein's greenshadowcabinet.us? So can you let our listeners know about what this is about?
Many democracies around the world create shadow cabinets. So when an election is over, the opposition that didn't win continues to watchdog the party in power with a shadow cabinet. And literally, they shadow one-on-one the various members of the cabinet, from the president and the vice president, the secretary of defense, and you know, to agriculture and the U.S. trade rep, et cetera. And so we have all these positions populated. And it was a shock to me that there were so many people out there who were eminently qualified who wanted to get up and volunteer and do that. And so we have an amazing group now that includes, for example, Leah Bolger, who is a colonel, a retired colonel from, I believe, the U.S. Navy, who was formerly head of Veterans for Peace. She is the head of our Defense Department, so you can see that our Defense Department is a true Defense Department, not an offense department. Julian Assange's lawyer, Michael Ratner, is one of the members of our Civil Liberties and Civil Rights divisions within the Department of Justice. Kevin Zeese is head of the Department of Justice, and so on. I mean, it's an all-star team. And together we watchdog what Obama and the cabinet and Congress are doing. So if you go to greenshadowcabinet.us, you will see our most recent policies. So we've been commenting and issuing alternative policies. For example, I had the great pleasure of pardoning Bradley Manning in the alternative universe where democracy prevails. That's the universe of the Green Shadow Cabinet. So we can, and we did, pardon Grant Bradley Manning in our alternative universe. We have, you know, created a Green New Deal to put people back to work. We have forgiven student debt because they didn't do anything wrong. There was nothing to be forgiven. We've broken up the big banks. We've opened up and nationalized the Fed. We've created healthcare as a human right under a Medicare for All system. I mean, they're great things that we can do, that we should do. We've restored our civil liberties. We've downsized the military to about half of what it is now in the so-called real world. And we've brought the troops home. You know, we don't have to lose it all, you know, which is what we're doing right now. We could actually have it all. there is a system that works, and it starts with democracy and respect for our civil liberties and our civil rights. So take a look at greenshadowcabinet.us and be uplifted by the democracy that we can be and that is within our reach.
I love the concept of it, and I think that, and I foresee someday, well, I do foresee the youth rising in 2014, independence, a huge movement outside the two-party system of independence taking back our government across the spectrum. And it's fascinating because when the congressional races, local races are purified and cleaned, of course, with the tools of not only social media and technology bringing integrity within our electoral system through, you know, like a national election system, listing every single candidate running for office, but a huge grassroots movement on the ground of Occupy, Tea Party, We the People, independents, just good, honest people, the youth, the universities rising. And so pretty cool because if when that happens, when a presidential candidate independent comes into play, 16, 20, definitely, I think a lot of those people in that cabinet should be handpicked, if not all, that yeah. you're building here to be a part of that. I mean, that president, yeah, I guess one of their platforms should be to pardon people like Bradley Manning and, you know, just people wrongfully behind bars, minimal marijuana possession. I mean, just the yeah. list goes on and on. These innocent people, Snowden, Julian Assange. I love that you have his lawyer on there. We actually want him to be a speaker at the fest we're holding. United We Stand this upcoming October. So that's, I had no idea. That's really cool. I'll talk to you after the show for that. But I love what you're doing, and I can't wait to incorporate that more into what Free and Equal's doing long term.
Wonderful. Well, one more mention, because he would be terrific for United We Stand too. That is our Assistant Secretary for Higher Education, and his name is Roshan Bliss. And he is just a knock your socks off spokesperson for young people and what we need to do to liberate. You know, he talks about emancipating young people from this incredible debt burden. Education, you know, should be a right. It used to be a right, you know, up through high school, which is what we needed to offer economic security to our younger generation. But now a high school degree doesn't do it. In order to be secure, you need a college degree. So, you know, we have really gone to bat for extending that free starter education up through college. And Roshan is an incredible, powerful advocate for that. So there's just, you know, some really great people that you'll find if you start browsing through the shadow cabinet. Ronnie Cummins, I should mention too, is the head of our Food and Drug Administration. Ronnie Cummins is, what is it called? It's the Organic Consumers Association, who basically orchestrated the protests against Monsanto. You know, there are 2 million people came out around the world to say no to GMOs. And in the wake of that, Monsanto said, okay, we're getting out of Europe. I mean, it was really amazing to see. There is so much energy out there, you know, to protect our food supply, and especially among young people. So Ronnie Cummins, can you imagine? Our FDA right now is all about giveaways to GMOs and to the agribusiness industry. The FDA should be called the Agribusiness Protection Agency and Welfare Agency, actually. So can you just imagine putting the opponent of agribusiness and the opponent of GMOs into that agency to head the Food and Drug Administration. Tim DeChristopher is another person I should mention. Tim DeChristopher, who went and single-handedly busted up the illegal auctions that the Bush administration was conducting of public lands. They were auctioning off public lands for coal and oil exploitation, I should say. And Tim DeChristopher went in. He was going to, like, protest the auction. But when he walked in, the guy running the show assumed he was there to bid. And he said, oh, are you here to bid? And Tim thought, well, hey, why not? Sure, yes, I'm here to bid. And he took a paddle, and he bid. He bid up to, you know, $20,000 and $30,000 that he didn't have in order to buy these lands, which were being illegally sold. So at any rate, he saved thousands and thousands of acres of public land. He wound up going to jail for it. He just recently got out. But he is the head of our emergency climate action coordinator. So that's another person to bring to United We Stand. That would be really powerful.
I am all about that. We have a 10-stop university bus tour. We're going to kick it off with a bang at UCLA October 12th. And then I would love to collaborate and incorporating your cabinet into the 10-stop tour as we evolve, you know, move across the country where everybody's located, and I have a little bit of touch of that into it. So that's great. I'm so many new things I'm learning on this interview, not only our listeners. So we spoke briefly before we got started. I want to touch it before we wrap up on a final question, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Jill, that's really important to you, I know?
Thanks for mentioning that, Christina. So this is sort of a poster child of our government kind of stabbing us in the back behind our backs. There is a whole new trade agreement which is being negotiated by 600 corporate representatives, and our Congress people don't have access to it. The press doesn't have access to it, and the public doesn't. Obama is trying to get fast track status for this trade agreement. It's like NAFTA in that it creates rules that are very friendly if you're a multinational corporation. But if you are a small business, if you are a farmer, if you are a regular working person, it's absolutely devastating because it ties your hands in all kinds of ways. In the same way that NAFTA created a race to the bottom, and it basically enabled big multinational corporations to go wherever they can most exploit labor and the environment and where there are least protections. So essentially, it moved millions of jobs out of the U.S. economy and, you know, contributed enormously to this very dysfunctional economy we have right now. And by the way, if you think it's going to get better, the secret, and it's not a very well-kept secret, these are statistics from the Department of Labor. The U.S. Department of Labor says that 9 out of 10 jobs being created over the next decade are low-wage, insecure jobs that don't require a college degree, don't pay college wages. Half of them, 5 out of 10 jobs being created, don't even require a high school degree. So we've been engineered into this low-wage, insecure, basically impoverished, third-world-type economy. And much of that is thanks to NAFTA, which sent the jobs overseas, and it basically told working people in this country that you better settle for low wages, no benefits, or your job is also going overseas. So it's created this, you know, misery economy. And the Trans-Pacific Partnership is basically more of the same. It applies to far more countries. So, for example, Vietnam makes China look good. Wages in Vietnam are half of what they are in China. And this will basically enable industries to flee to Vietnam to go to super low wages. It includes other very obscure countries where it's illegal to have a labor union. So there are absolutely no protections for working people, etc. Check it out. You know, you can go to citizenstrade.org. You can also find out about it at thegreenshadowcabinet.us, or you can go to flushthetpp.org, which is kind of a grassroots movement to get the word out and tell our congressmen and women, do not give fast track authority to this agreement. It needs to see the light of day. The minute it sees the light of day, it will be stopped, because the American people, you know, will not go for being stabbed in the back. We've stopped 14 other trade agreements that also would have been stabs in the back. This one will be stopped too if people stand up. So we can do that together.
Thanks, Jill, for those really in-depth thoughts. And yeah, it seems TPP, as you said, you know, for financial, it's kind of like financial for banks is what NAFTA did for manufacturing. If that, yeah. It just, yeah, it's. I'm learning so much as always. I have the best. I don't even call this a job. This is like the best thing in the world. I feel so fortunate. I get to be on the phone with Dr. Jill Stein and interviewing, you know, these cool, great people that people look up to throughout, I think, not only the U.S., but even more so the world in the foreseeable future. And that being said, given the fact that, you know, I live by the quote every day, on my fridge, Winston Churchill, never, never, never give up. And I have a feeling that you live probably by that quote or similar as well. You're so relentless, you know, like the Ralph Naders and the Rocky Andersons and just all the great leaders out there, even Gary Johnsons and so on. And so 2016, I guess a lot of people are going to be excited, you know, whatever you feel comfortable answering or not, but future race, running, I mean, what's up in the air? Still got to worry about 2000, you know, 14, I guess, right?
I mean, I think the fight goes on, and the question is always, what's your role at any given time? And I think, the fight's going to go on, and where exactly I will be, and what my husband will be able to put up with, we'll see. But in my mind, this last election was a real, it's a breaking point, in many ways. We've kind of come to the end game, on climate, on our economy, on our education system, healthcare, our civil liberties are under attack. The war continues to expand. And I think it's an incredible wake-up moment for lots of people. In the words of Alice Walker, the biggest way people give up power is by not knowing we have it to start with. I think what's happening now is that people are realizing that if we get together, we really have unstoppable power. So I think it's all about getting organized to make that happen. Elections are a big part of it, but what we do between elections, is also really critical too. So, I'd encourage people to plug in, be a part of United We Stand, and check in at the greenshadowcabinet.us, and let's keep building the fight so that we can seize the power that we already have. We do have the power of democracy. It's all about throwing off these chains of fear that have been drummed into us, that we do not dare to stand up, for the jobs we need or for the climate, we must have to survive. For the education that we deserve, the healthcare is a human right. We can create an economy. This can pay for itself. We can downsize the military. This can be a win-win. It doesn't have to be the lose-lose we're heading for right now. There's a win-win out there, and the missing ingredient is us. Nobody else is going to do it for us. So it's all about our standing up and taking our future back. It is in our hands, so let's make it happen.
Well, everybody, my gut says that Dr. Jill Stein has the bug and her husband's super cool. And even though she didn't say she's going to run for office, my gut says that she probably will. It's just a matter of which level. I know Gary Johnson at the conference was talking about they're like president, but some said go back and run for governor again. And, you know, the idea is thrown out there. But, you know, in any case, thank you so much, Jill, today. If you were to run in 2016, you know, in my experience, the final question, I promise, but and it is you know, my experience working on the Inn with presidential debates, ballot access, all these parties is that as I would dig through the campaigns, I really almost felt like each individual, whether they had a party label, green, libertarian, doesn't matter, even a campaign, as I became more connected with the actual candidate, I just started really seeing each person as an individual, as the independent who they are. And where they almost have to become reliant on a party because of ballot access, because of this and that, so many different components. And I guess what I'm getting at is that, you know, do you feel that you would ever run as an independent or you're really party? I just see you as an independent. I see everybody as individuals. And as you know, my take on parties is they become larger at the national level, they inevitably become infiltrated. And thank God during the presidential debates, I didn't have to deal with any of the parties. So I do like the Constitution Party a lot. They're so small, though, and still pure. And even Justice Party. But as they become bigger, they're just difficult to work with. And they attract people who want power at the top, not the campaigns per se, but the parties. And I'm sure Ben Manske, you know, had some difficulties with parties. I know in the Libertarians, too. I can't speak for them. But, you know, what's your feeling? Do you feel like if the system wasn't so rigged, independent might be more of a direction for you in the future? Kind of like Ralph Nader going from green to deciding in 08, I'm going to run independent.
I mean, in a way, in the best of all worlds, if we lived in a perfect world, we certainly would not need parties. And parties are very flawed. They are very flawed organizations. And for me, a party is a It's an organization of last resort, but I fought as an independent for decades, and to the point where I felt like our lives were just too much at risk, and we couldn't afford to do that anymore. And for me, what I really like about the Green Party is that it doesn't take money. You know, it is firewalled against money. In my mind, that's where the real serious corruption comes in. Whether you want to or not, you know, it's just human nature to want to protect the hand that feeds you. You don't want to bite it, you want to protect it. So the minute you start accepting big money, even if it comes with a good intent, you got a problem there. So the Green Party has, you know, protections against influence. We don't accept money from corporations or their surrogates, from lobbyists or CEOs who hire lobbyists, that is, who have a vested interest in trying to use their influence to push you in a certain direction. So, you know, to that extent, in my mind, the Green Party is as pure as you can get. It has all the failings that a public interest organization has. And it can be hard to organize when you got so many people and there's no built-in pecking order. The problem with the other parties is that money talks loud, and the more you have, the louder you talk. So there's a built-in pecking order, which makes things sometimes more, you know, the system is a little clearer, and sometimes you get stuff done faster, but you pay a huge price for it because it turns out to be money and power that invariably are calling some shots. So that's why I've sort of settled here, and I feel like 1,000 points of light is where the predators want us to be. They have us firmly under control, and as long as we remain unorganized, they stay in control. So, to my mind, getting together around a political party that is firewalled against the influence of money, that's how we overcome the incredible advantage that the economic and political elite have right now. The political elite is just a surrogate for the economic elite. And it's like Judge Louis Brandeis said, you know, a century ago, we can have either a democracy or vast concentrations of wealth. And we have the latter, which means we ain't going to have the former. So it's, you know, in my mind, it's not going to be an easy haul, but we need to move towards a place of greater justice, greater democracy, and sustainability. And it's a wake-up moment for that. In my experience, the Green Party is the rallying point where those critical foundations of our survival all come together, and we just put our heads together and figure out how to do it because we're not going to give up.
Yeah, I would say that I do think that parties are gonna unfortunately fade away. Well, not unfortunately, I think they will fade away. I think money and politics will fade away because of the power of social media and technology rising and people being seen for the individuals that they are. And when elected, ballot access barriers will essentially fade away as well, and all of those things, open debates, more, you know. So I just definitely, I definitely look forward to you meeting so many of our leaders at United We Stand. Thank you, Jill. At
Thank you.
UCLA, October 12th.
I can't wait. I'm looking forward to it. And I look forward to that day when we have a perfect world and we no longer need to, you know, the power of political parties to fight entrenched interests. But to get from here to there, we got to fight them with something. Because they're going to
Together.
put down even on the internet. Yeah, exactly. So.
As one, on the ground, internet, there's a lot more of us than there are of them. And while the government has plans to, you know, shut things down, maybe some say internet or whatever, there's a lot of maybe as smarter people that will counter that, you know. And in the end, we the people will prevail, and I think a massive or no a massive uprising will happen at a level the government could never be prepared for. So thank you so much, Jill. I
Thank
loved having you on the show. You are my doctor. I hope I'm never ill, but if I am, I'm going to be flying you in.
All
And
right.
I love you lots. And again, anybody, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying back at you. Lots of
GreenshadowCabinet.us. Check out GreenshadowCabinet.us. I look forward to connecting with you more on that after the show, Jill. Thank you so much for your time today.
Sure thing. Thanks, Christina. Take care.
And thank you, everyone, for joining the Free and Equal Network. Lots of love to all of you out there.